From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Board of Fisheries is underway in Sitka. Expect more drama from the Central Kenai Peninsula this summer. And has the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission outlived its usefulness? All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission is defending itself against a recent state report pointing out inefficiencies and legislation that could dissolve the agency. Lisa Fu has more.
Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission Chair Bruce Twomley is worried about the agency's future, especially after a bill was introduced last week to dismantle the commission as a cost-saving measure.
We would like to get to the end of this session so that we can do what we can do on our end to try to suggest savings. We hope we're still in a position to do that. We hope we're still intact at the end of this session.
The Department of Fish and Game released a report earlier this month that draws attention to backlogged permit application cases, a slow work pace by commission heads, and alternatives to the agency's organizational structure. The commission responded Monday to the report in writing and posted it on its website. The commission doesn't take issue with the whole report. Twomley recognizes it includes a lot of praise for the agency, and he stands firmly behind one of the report's recommendations to maintain the three commissioners until all the cases are complete.
We think that is a very sound recommendation.
Since its creation in 1973, Twomley says the commission has been going through a deluge of thousands of applications to limited entry fisheries and is now down to the last 28 cases. The report recommends the remaining cases be complete by the end of June. A more reasonable time frame, says Twomley, is by the end of 2016. He defends why the commission takes so long to adjudicate cases.
Some cases are more than 15 years old because we had more than 23,000 applications to work through. And the reason is really the volume and the complexity of the cases and the fact that these huge caseloads arrive almost at the same time.
A bill by Representative Louise Stutes would eliminate the commission by transferring duties to Fish and Game and a division of the Department of Administration. Twomley says the survival of the agency is vital. He says the commission will likely limit one or more fisheries in the near future, but wouldn't name them. He says the work the commission does is complicated and specialized. Twomley has been a CFEC commissioner since Governor Jay Hammond appointed him in 1982.
The only reason I'm sticking around is because I think there is some critical work to be done. But if someone wants to force my retirement, that would not be the worst thing that could happen to me. It would not be good, however, I think, for the agency or the task and the remaining employees at the agency.
The CFEC has 28 full-time employees, including the three commissioners. The House Fisheries Committee on Tuesday heard an agency overview from the CFEC commissioners. Committee Chair Stutes said the Fish and Game report wouldn't be discussed, but committee members alluded to details in the report through their questions, like the slow pace of adjudication. Stutes says her bill to eliminate the CFEC will get its first hearing March 5th. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Some king salmon reared in southeast Alaska are traveling farther north as ocean temperatures rise. That news was delivered to the Alaska Board of Fisheries as their spring meeting opened in Sitka Monday afternoon. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The three-year meeting cycle of the Board of Fish is designed to take the board to different regions of the state, and a substantial portion of each 10-day meeting is devoted to education of the board. Regional managers and biologists from the Department of Fish and Game deliver literally reams of data about salmon harvest levels, escapement, and economics. Most of this information rolls in and out with the tide and generates little comment from the board, but this fact caught their attention. The king salmon hatched in Southeast's four top-producing river systems, the Alsek, Situk, Taku, and Stikine, are going very far afield. This is ADF&G Sportfish Coordinator Ed Jones.
All four of these stocks are considered outside rearing, or what we term the far north migrators. This means that shortly after the juveniles enter the marine to rear, they essentially take a right and head straight out to the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea.
Again, these rivers are the four largest producers of king salmon in Southeast. Board member Orville Huntington wanted to know more.
Do you guys know where it is they're going?
Jones knows exactly where the kings are going. The National Marine Fisheries Service has increased trawl surveys in the Western Gulf in recent years. The surveys are catching king salmon, some of which have tiny coated wire tags embedded in their skulls. Those salmon were tagged in Southeast, says Jones.
They are typically found from Kodiak West. And in years, what's really interesting to me is in years of really warm water, which took place in 2005 and 2006, most of our coated wire tags in those years were found north in the Bering Sea. So that told me, well, it was evidence to me to suggest that the fish are being opportunistic and they're moving with water temperatures. They're going out to that part of the world and then they're moving as water temperatures dictate.
Board member Sue Jeffrey asked Jones to elaborate on this idea.
You're saying that warmer waters create different patterns, are they moving to cooler waters then?
Through the chair, Ms. Jeffrey, in 2005 and 6, it was warm water years. Those were very warm, and in that year, we actually found, they sampled, for instance, a tapu coated wire tag all the way up by St. Matthews Island, which is quite a bit north in the Bering Sea. But that's what's going on. The fish have a preferred temperature that their feed is in, that they like to operate in, and they're moving with it.
Although the Taku, Alsek, Situk, and Stikeen produce most of Southeast king salmon, Jones said that there are seven smaller stocks that the department considers inside rearing. Once these fish enter the marine environment as juveniles, Jones said they remain in regional waters until maturity. Reporting from the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Due to weather-related travel delays, the Sitka meeting of the Fish Board got off to a late start on Monday. They're expected to meet through March 3rd.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
In a development that will not help the tense situation in Cook Inlet between commercial fishermen and the sport-guided industry, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has already announced closures for king salmon fishing on the Kenai and Kasilof Rivers. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has more.
The Kenai River will be closed to king salmon fishing all summer. ADF&G made the announcement a day after releasing its preseason estimates for Chinook returns, and the downward trend of the last several years continues with an outlook of just 5,200 early run kings on the Kenai River. The late run isn't expected to be much better and will also be closed for the entire month of July, though larger in overall size at about 22,000 fish, which is a slight increase over the past 2 years. It's still the third lowest return seen in three decades. There will be some opportunity for king harvest on the Kasilof River. On Saturdays between May 1st and June 30th, one naturally produced king can be caught, though bait and multiple hooks will be prohibited. There will also be a bag and possession limit of one hatchery-produced fish throughout the week. In Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
The Coast Guard in Unalaska is holding a cargo ship in port over alleged environmental crimes. The Lindavia arrived there from China a couple of weeks ago. Kevin Feldes with the U.S. Attorney's Office says the 600-foot ship was loading up with seafood to take back to Asia, but was detained before it could leave port.
Right now, the crew is still here in Dutch Harbor, and they will be staying there pending further steps in the investigation.
The Lindavia is currently at anchor in Dutch Harbor. Feldes says the ship's owner, Germany-based Dalsberg, may post a bond to let it leave port as the investigation continues.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The final work is being done on Petersburg's new drive-down dock, which is scheduled to open sometime later this winter. But what will that mean for users, and how will it all work? The Bureau's Port and Harbor Advisory Board looked at some initial plans. Angela Denning has more.
Harbor Master Gloriann Wallen told board members that she has gathered rules from other drive-down docks in Auk Bay, Sitka, and Ketchikan and compiled a rough draft. She said she'd like to have something in place for when the drive-down dock opens.
I'd like to have a couple of signs up there that says, you know, this is what you can do right off the bat, and this is what you can't do.
The purpose of the drive-down dock is to be a temporary place for the public to conveniently load and unload gear from boats. It is meant for all boat owners. Some board members voiced concern about the tour ships using the drive-down dock, but Wallen says most of that traffic is required to dock elsewhere because of Homeland Security. There would be usage fees charged through commercial annual permits or one-time use permits. Wallen estimates utilities for powering the dock and for its trash collection to be about $17,000 a year.
I can either go out and raise rates for the entire harbor to capture those costs, or we could put forth the idea of a use permit.
Wallen reiterated that the drive-down dock policy is a work in progress that is meant to be revised. Assemblymember Kurt Wallhuter, who attended the meeting, agreed.
This is going to be a moving target. You go ahead and in concept, say, yeah, this is workable.
Okay.
But there's going to be...
It's going to need to be tweaked.
It's going to be And it's going to be because there's smarter people out there than me that are going to try to find the loopholes.
Some of those proposed rules include a four-hour time limit on the drive-down dock. Overnight moorage is not allowed unless the owner contacts the harbor office for unforeseen circumstances. No overnight parking of vehicles is allowed either. Using the drive down for vessel repair would be by reservation. There are 2 60-foot areas that have power that would be designated for that, and charges would apply. The board talked a lot about what that fee should be. A flat $50 was proposed, but some thought that would encourage vessel owners to leave their boats. Wallhuter proposed $50 in addition to the harbor's transient moorage rate to encourage boat owners to stay on task.
So that you just don't park your boat there and sit and go, well, gosh, I'm paying $50. I'm out of here. You know what I mean? So they leave, you know, but they stay there and try to get that job done.
The board discussed charging $1 a foot per day for long-term work reservations.
Dollar a foot.
I like $1 a foot.
I like $1 a foot, too. That would be my, just because it's just simple in it.
It is simple.
$1 a foot would be more than the transient rate, which board members hoped would encourage vessel owners to use the dock stalls for longer projects instead. The board decided to adopt the drive-down dock draft as a guideline, stating that they could change it as needed. The dock is costing $7.8 million to build, paid for by $10.8 million in state grant money. The drive-down dock proposals will be sent on to the Borough Assembly to consider. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KTOO's Lisa Fu in Juneau, KCAW's Robert Woolsey in Sitka, KDLL's Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, KUCB's Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, and KFSK's Angela Denning in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.